All right, guys, welcome to another episode. In this episode, I'm going to be talking to Melissa Stagnaro. She is the vice president of ARSA. It's a search and rescue sport organization. I'm going to let her fill you guys in on this very fascinating topic. At first, I wasn't really a whole lot interested. I found it interesting enough, but I became very fascinated with it as Melissa explained the details on this. So I'm going to let her explain it. She can give you a lot more detail than I can. And I hope you guys enjoy this interview.
So Melissa, it's nice to meet you. I looked into the website that you sent me about IPOR. And I think this would be a great opportunity to talk a little bit about it and you know, give some information to the listeners.
Awesome. So
tell us a little bit about this. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Melissa Stagnaro. I've been doing dog sports for about 25 years. And one of the sports I did with my now old Dutch Shepherd, and I'm mm-hmm. doing with my young German short hair, mm-hmm. is a sport search and rescue. So technically, it would be referenced as IPOR. But in the U.S., if people do know about dog sports and they just hear the IPO part, they think it's bite work. So
the bite sport, yeah.
Much to the chagrin of our European friends, we call it just RH for Rettungshund, so the German for rescue dog. So we just usually refer to it as RH, but technically it is called IPOR.
Okay.
And for the dog sport nerds out there, there is also like an IPON for Nordic competitions. Wow. And I think there's some other ones. But yeah, so in the US, we just call it RH because it's a little more clear and my German is not very good.
I gotcha. Yeah, when I saw IPOR, that's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
You know, I went into the website and I looked a little bit into it, but yeah, that definitely makes sense to make it nice and clear. So you've been doing sports for 25 years. So is it safe to assume that some of the sports that you did were IPO? Like the
I've done some obedience only titles with some mixed breeds I had early on. Because when I started, there wasn't a lot of dog sports for mixed breeds. And then with my Dutchie, I did some of the advanced tracking and the STP, the article. But he did suit sport, so I didn't want to send him on a guy with just a sleeve.
Gotcha. And now tell us a little bit about the organization.
Yeah, so I'm the vice president of ARSA, which is American Rettungshund Sport Organization. Mm-hmm. So there's different groups offering these tests, similar to IGP, you know, whether you go to USCA or DVG or what, it's the same rule book. And so the organization is just, you know, maybe different championships or different kind of record keeping. So there are, our organization is open to all breeds, all dogs, papers, no papers, crop docked, intact. We welcome everybody. We have club level trials. We have national trials. Wow. But for our international championship, then someone would need to have FCI papers because we are under the auspices of the FCI.
Okay.
But to compete in the U.S. with us, we welcome everybody.
And how often do you guys hold these competitions? Is it like on a club level? Is it like a regional level as well? How does it work?
Yeah. So we've had both club and regional. Both club and national. So we're still building some stuff up. We have a big presence in the Mid-Atlantic area. There are a couple clubs closer to you down in Texas that are pretty active. So they compete with the same rule book, but more under the SV. So the USCA and the SV, but same rules, same activity. And so they would have a championship just for German Shepherds, and they would also be eligible to send international championship for the International Rescue Dog Organization. But those are the only differences. We train together often with different groups. Mm-hmm. So I would welcome anybody interested. Obviously, we'd love for you to join ARSA and be a club. But if there's a USCA club near you, that would obviously make more sense to get started with them.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have folks in the Dakotas, down in Florida. Like I said, there's a pretty strong contingent in Texas. We have folks in California.
Sure. So I noticed, I've been doing sports not too long, maybe the past close to 10 years, maybe even less than that, actually, maybe like 6-7 years. And I noticed that, and I think a lot of people who do sports can relate to this, that when people do sports, they get very competitive. And you get people from, like they want to start, and they're very active, and they want to do it sort of as a fun activity to do with their dog. And you have your ultra competitive person that, they think about this every day, and their goal is to get to the highest level at all costs. And as I'm sure you've been doing sports for 25 years, I'm sure you've noticed that too in the, in the sports world, you have people that are very, very competitive. So with RH, do you notice that? What is the bulk of your competitors? This is, just me asking from an outsider perspective. Are people really into this, or would you say like the bulk of your competitors or participants are maybe not as incredibly competitive as some of the other sports, as I'm sure you know?
Yeah, so the great thing about RH is, especially for the club level competitions, we're open to a number of different types of dog handler situations.
Mm-hmm.
So some folks, like you said, like for the US, especially if we set aside bite sports, mm-hmm. this would probably be, if as an American, this would probably be your best opportunity to compete at an international championship.
Mm-hmm.
So some folks are like really into it. And of course they want to qualify for the US team. Sure. And, all the obedience is beautiful. All the search work is crisp and everything, for sure. So this is sports search and rescue, but in outside of the US, this is the foundation work for actual deployable search and rescue. So we have a lot of folks that participate in the RH in the sport side,
mm-hmm.
just to get more searches.
To
get more obedience around other people to search in other areas. And like some teams, the SAR certification is the be all end all. They really want that. They care about that more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those folks get some like test nerves. Right. So for their big important SAR certification, they might get really nervous and make the dog nervous. So we welcome them to do the sport because it's very similar. You're being judged. Idea. There's a clipboard. You know, there's a little pressure. And if they have a meltdown, well, they lost their entry fee, but, no one really cares.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
We also have folks that have a retired IGP dog. The obedience, most of it is very similar to IGP obedience.
Mm-hmm.
There is like hopping up on a 1 meter high table, mm-hmm. but there's no jumps.
Okay.
And or A-frame or. Sure. So if an IGP dog is retired just because they've gone through all the competitions and they want to try something new, or, maybe they're a little older, they can easily come into RH and still perform very well, and it's a little bit less physically demanding. So sure. We have some of those folks that also participate.
Okay.
And we have some people who have always wanted to do search and rescue, and maybe something's holding them back. You know, to be on a team, you have to be on call. Sure. But if you have a very demanding job or family obligations, you know, it's not realistic for you to be sure. able to, you know, fly off to Turkey and go help.
Right.
Just at the drop of a hat. But they still want to be in it. They still want to keep up their skills and their dog skills.
Yeah.
So this is a great venue. Also, some folks really are interested in search and rescue, but the dog is not super suitable for actual search and rescue. Maybe it's nervous around sure. thunderstorms, for instance.
Sure.
But I'm sure you would agree, it's better for them to learn as much as they can on their current dog.
Yes.
And get it all out and get their human skills doing well before then they go to bring in another dog.
That's
so we have
some
yeah. dogs that, you know, honestly, for a variety of reasons, wouldn't be suitable for actual deployment. But you can still do this competition. And but also some people, they can't be doing the 48-hour wilderness hike carrying their food, the dog's food, and the water. We have like a lot of older people that do the sport. They've been doing search and rescue for years, and now they're 70, 80 years old, and they're like, well, I can't safely be deployable, but I love doing this. So that's what's so awesome about RH, is you can have real upcoming, you know, deployable SAR teams that want a little extra training help and training support. You have folks that their dog isn't quite there, but they can totally enjoy the sport. People who can't do the physical demands or have family obligations, and so couldn't commit to a search and rescue team. And there are technically six, but in reality, really four scent options. So there's really something for everybody. You know,
that
we
is
have
really interesting.
We have livestock guardian dogs. We have little small terriers. We have all different breeds. And of course, you know, the Malinois, the Labrador.
Yeah.
But because there's so many options, really you can find something that you and your dog can do well at.
I really like that. You know, as you're mentioning this and the possible alternatives to the different circumstances that people have, I'm starting to like the idea of this more and more as you're talking about it. You know, because looking at the website and, you know, reading your email definitely gave me some information, but as you're explaining it and breaking it down and telling me how it's a good alternative for different people in these different situations, I really, really like that. Because, you know, I've had people that have had questions like, you know, I want to do some sort of sport, you know, and I do protection sports. So, you know, that's my specialty. That's what I like to do. And a lot of times you have dogs that just don't have quite the temperament for protection sports. But they have the traits of a working dog. You know, they want to do something. And, you know, then the other alternatives, you know, are dog diving, which is really mainly seasonal. Then you have scent work. But I really like this one because it seems to be very, very complex, but not in a way that is difficult, but complex enough that it would satisfy the dog, the working dog, and the person. Because I've also had people have told me, yeah, I want to do search and rescue. And then this is such a great place to send them to at least get their feet wet.
Yeah, and I would say it's a nice balance. I'm sure in your area you've had this experience. You know, Malinois are so popular, and you get some kind of dicey, not the greatest bred dogs.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and so dock jumping is adrenaline. It like maybe not the best, but this, you know, they actually have to mentally focus on a task.
Yes.
There's control elements, but there's also the independence of the search work. So I think it's a really great activity for dogs that, you know, can't be still, but you just don't want to just gas pedal all the way. You need to.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to go
have a little balance.
Do search and rescue. I can do this sport and, you know, and then fulfill my dog. And I also get to do something with my dog. So that's great. I really like that.
And, you know, similar to the bite sports, some folks use the RH platform as a breed suitability test. You know, I train with actual SAR teams and most of the people are awesome. Some of the dogs are awesome and some, you know, it's a challenge. Because we don't have a big culture of breeding for search and rescue suitability.
Right.
So, you know, this can help with that to say, yes, they weren't in Turkey on a big grubble pile with all this crazy stuff, but they did do this test that is an international standard to evaluate search and rescue suitability. So, you know, this might be a good thing for your breeding program.
That's an excellent point too, because you're right. You know, most of the breeding for working dogs primarily revolves around, you know, some sort of protection aspect, you know, or like scent detection aspect. But this definitely makes it much more specific to search and rescue, which makes sense.
Well, and it's like an all around dog.
Right.
So there's agility components. The dog has to walk across a horizontal ladder. There's some temperament components. At one point, the dog needs to be carried, you know, and then there's traditional obedience, healing, retrieve, long stay, normal stuff. And then we have all the search work.
Nice.
Right. So for a dog to complete, so there's three levels of sport titles that get progressively harder. You know, for a dog to complete those tasks, it's really showing quite a lot about the dog. And if folks are more into actual search and rescue, after the third sport level, you could take a mission readiness test, and that is pure actual SAR work. It's the same what teams do internationally. You would be qualified to be on call for the United Nations search and rescue team. So that's like a real legit. So the other three levels are just for sport. And then there is an actual mission readiness level beyond that.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Let's talk about the different phases. I know we've touched on it a little bit. You mentioned quite a bit of it. So there's obedience, search, and dexterity. So obedience, you already mentioned that it's similar to the IGP sport, minus the jump and the A-frame.
Yeah, so like the healing pattern is the same, and two teams go on the field the same time. One does the long down while the other does the more active stuff. But one of the other things that we're evaluating, the temperament and obedience, instead of the IGP doing the figure eight around four people, or the RH figure eight, there's a club provided neutral dog and bitch and two people.
Okay.
And then so you're circling these to show that your dog can be under control with other dogs. And
that is unique for sure.
One of the people that's not the dog handler that don't have the two guest dogs is the downstay person. So the downstay dog has to stay while the handler is in this mix. So it's kind of a harder downstay than IGP.
Yeah, there's definitely more complexity there, because you have now the dogs, and then you have the you know, one of the handlers, so the dog is away from the handler.
Yeah, now, and then there's you know, there's other agility obstacles. There's a plank At the beginner level, it's basically just a piece of wood on some bricks. So the dog has to jump, stop, and move out and control. At the intermediate level, it's the same plank, but it's on barrels. So it rolls. And on the advanced level, it's basically the same plank, but it's a swing. So they jump on it and then it moves quite a bit. So unlike traditional agility that's, you know, go, 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 this is control, control, control.
Methodical. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
because
if, you know, if the dog is on a collapsed house searching, you know, you're going to want to stop. Like, it might be unsafe for you to go up there.
Right.
You know, because you weigh more than the dog, but you can send the dog directionally, stop them, tell them to go to the left, send them back. But also the dog is the one stepping on the plank or the piece of wood or the corrugated metal roof and can understand, oh, I have to choose another path, or I have to be very slow and careful, not like a crazy dog that's going to maybe hurt themselves. So there's a lot of control elements. There's a section of healing. It's called a rubble pile. It's, you know, just some, maybe a tire and a chain link fence on the ground and some debris that you and the dog have to walk over it. So the dog has to be comfortable on these surfaces and in control and understand, you know, we can't just go super fast all the time.
Right. There's got to be some level of intelligence there. It's not just like go crazy. Okay.
Yeah. So it's definitely a mental workout for the dogs too. So the obedience dexterity is a phase together.
Okay.
So similar to IGP, the two teams would go in, the one would do the long down stay, the other would do all the active things, and then you would swap and come off the field. And then the other phase is the search phase.
Right.
So you can do tracking, which is, you know, IGP style, pretty tight tracking with articles. You can do area search, which would be a wilderness. So RH, you're only ever looking for live people. We don't do any cadaver or human remains. So if tracking, you have area search, which is an off-leash wilderness. At the beginner level, there's one lost person. At the intermediate, there's two. At the advanced, there's three. And the area itself to be searched expands. There's rubble search, which is like a collapsed house or something similar and the same. There's one, two, or three victims depending on your level. And there's also man trailing, which is similar to tracking, but it's often not as tight because the dog is working both ground disturbance and air scent. And so for man trailing, the aging is much longer.
Okay.
So they don't have to be precise on the footfalls, but like the beginner is 1 hour, whereas the beginner tracking is 20 minutes. So it's different in that way. There are two other scent options that any ARSA club could host a competition. You would just need to be prepared. There's an avalanche. And there's a water rescue.
And that so is again, interesting.
The water rescue is human beings. It's not cadaver material that's under the water. And there's actually for the water, no scent work. It's think of all breeds could do it, but think of like the Newfoundland jumping off the boat or being let go out of a helicopter. And bringing a life preserver to a drowning person.
Okay.
So that's the water rescue.
Okay.
And then
the
avalanche is, you know, the dog is digging in the snow.
Right.
You know, where the lost person is. So those two, we could totally offer trials. The Newfoundland Club of America does do you know, something kind of similar. So we'd love to get more Newfies or Labradors or any water loving dog and put on one of the water trials. And anyone in suitable weather could definitely do an avalanche. But at a typical club trial, they're going to offer tracking, area search, man trailing. If they're lucky enough to have a rubble site nearby, then they'll offer rubble. But definitely for a club to offer tracking, area search, and man trailing, you don't really need any special place.
Right. Yeah, I would say, you know, the challenge would be maybe the rubble, you know, that I could see that being up. But obviously there's different elements that you could teach without necessarily having a collapsed house.
Yeah,
in your training area.
Even some actual FEMA rubble teams train a lot on pallet piles, and
that
it's just
sense. What
it sounds like. So shipping pallets, and yeah, for a beginner dog, you would make like a nice cave that's fairly structurally sound, and you know, safe for the hider, you know. And then for more advanced dogs, you're just piling the pallets up. And I was at a training event in Kansas, and the pallet pile was so high, I took a photo from the top, and you know, I looked like a little ant. So, and the beginner level of rubble, the space requirement is minimal. So yes, so we have some folks that train with us and like to do the testing that their goal is to do beginner level tracking, beginner level area, beginner level man trailing, beginner level rubble. They're not so interested in anything more, but they want to dabble and get their dog exposed to all of those. So the requirements for a rubble for the beginner level, any club that's motivated to find some old pallets and you know, maybe some like old plastic tubes. It could definitely build something large enough for the beginner level. And then, you know, so when I've been training and when I've been trialing, a lot of, like I said, FEMA teams have rubble sites. Sometimes they'll let you train there, and they'll often let you host trials there. Or a lot of fire departments also do search and rescue on the side. So a lot of community fire departments will have facilities, or sometimes it's called emergency services. I'm sure you're familiar with bark boxes,
right?
So
I've
it could be like a little cave thing, or it could be a tube. Anyway, you'll have at least three, but more is always better. And so you have a person hiding in one. So it's a way you could use for search and rescue or for police building
searches to kind of get
the dog thinking. And, you know, sometimes you'll trick the dog. They'll see the one and the other, and then they'll exit and they have to use their nose. So things like that you can work for the search and rescue teams. You know, it's the same skill set as a building search. So you can get a lot of training done if you're kind of creative and thinking about what resources really are in your community.
Okay. Now, a question I have, because you mentioned this a moment ago, you said, so tracking will take about 20 minutes. The man trailing could, you know, the setup and all of that takes about an hour.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
The aging. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. The aging of the, right. So like when you lay the track 20 minutes after.
Yep.
When you have the person hide about an hour after.
Yep.
So this seems like, you know, if we're talking about the a number of dogs, I guess a question I have is like when I go to competitions, sometimes we have like a lot of people lined up, you know, for the different levels, and that takes like all day. How does a competition, what does the competition look like in your guys' sport? Because you know, I can see the obedience and dexterity going pretty quickly, but the like some of the searches, like the man trailing, especially like in the upper levels, How is
Yeah.
this like a whole weekend, like 3 day event? How does it work?
So for big competitions, when we had our national championship in the spring, we had it over 2 days. But so you could have a 1 day trial, especially if it's a club trial. Generally, we do scent work in the morning. It's not prescribed. If you do obedience, you can do it, but just for the dog, it's usually easier to do the scent work in the morning. But if you had eight people doing beginner tracking, then you would tell the person the first track to be laid at 8, the second track to be laid at 8:05, and so on and so forth. So
I
they're
see.
aging, so it gets to be like a logistical, if we time this here. The area search takes almost no time. Clubs love when people sign up for area search because it's the same chunk of wilderness used for everybody at the same level. And so you have a hider go in for the beginner level. It's a pretty small area. The dog and handler team come up to the start line. You tell the dog to go search. Hopefully they find them within the time limit. Everything the judge says, okay, good, and then you bring the next person in. So the area
So
search
same
takes almost
person
no time.
hiding.
Often, but sometimes we give the folks a break. But yeah, so it could just be the same woods, the same hider, the same setup, and you're just going boom, 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 boom. So those take almost no time. Like the man trailing, like the 8 hour man trail, then the club would probably lay it the early evening before, to get the proper amount of aging.
And then, so for the 8 hour man trailing, this is an upper level, obviously.
Yeah.
So basically, that person would be camping out.
So it totally can. So for the RH man trailing, unlike some of the other man trailing certifications, we have to start at a bus stop, a gas station, a supermarket, a post office. We have to start at a populated place. So the dog is choosing the correct exit path. For the 1 hour beginner man trail, the person just waits an hour. For the other levels, someone from the club will pick them up at the ending place in a closed vehicle, no windows, no AC, no heat, drive them away, and then about an hour before, so then like 7 hours after that it's laid, they'll drive them back to leave them there for an hour.
That makes sense.
Because it's hard to get volunteers to say,
I'll camp out for
here's a battery for your iPod and some bottled water and a Snickers bar. See you tomorrow. But
I mean,
some
when you
folks
said that, I
that
was like, wow, but that makes sense the way you explained it.
but some folks for training tracks will meet up with, like in my area, that are hiking the Appalachian Trail or some other big hike, and they'll start the dog at the hider's vehicle in the parking lot of the hiking trails, and the dog will work, and they'll time it so that they're there like at sunrise. So there will have been like an 8 hour scent pool there at the guy's tent or whatever.
That is pretty cool. Now, some questions I have. What are some whether in obedience, and I think for obedience I have a pretty good idea, but like on the search, what are some DQs where it's an automatic, hey, you didn't fail because you didn't have enough points. It's like you're disqualified.
Similar to other sports, if the dog, goes to try to bite somebody or, obvious things. For the search work, especially for the wilderness or the rubble or the man trailing, which is quite long, if the dog were to eliminate and actually to empty, that's not, there's no penalty.
Not a DQ.
But if their dog were to mark here, mark that, like,
and you can
then,
see they're marking. You can tell when a dog is marking.
So for
obviously
any contact with the hider is frowned upon. So the ideal alert is 1 meter away. So the dog is not touching the hider. So my Dutch Shepherd, when we were finishing the highest level of the area search, so he did a bark alert. There's other alert options, but he did a bark alert. And he was very excited to find the person. And just in his rhythmic up and down, his front toenail hit the person. Just with his up and down motion.
Sure.
So we got a half point off every little fingernail poke. But, you know, obviously everyone understood. He wasn't touching the victim, but we had to take points off somewhere. A tricky thing is someone in a sleeping bag. So in training, you should set it up, you know, gently, you know, someone holding like a towel or a shawl or something, and then moving it over their head, and then kind of slowly moving it, you know, to close their face. And then, you know, sometimes judges don't want to put the person laying on their back, because the dog could inadvertently just step on their face, like no malice. You know, so oftentimes if you're laying down, then you put on your stomach, and some dogs are like, well, I can't see the face, and they're trying to move around, and might step on the person, again, not out of malice,
right,
to try
right.
to get at the face. So those things you would all just work out in training. But yeah, as far as DQ would be, like hiding training equipment, or, you know, having food or toys, or aggression. But but yeah, something like in other sports, you know, eliminating, if they did it during tracking, you know, you'd probably get some points off there, because they would have left the track ideally, you know, and then come back.
Sure.
But, you know, it's considered, you know, a more natural activity. And
Okay. That's pretty cool. And so if let's say, you know, there is a, let's say I have a club, right? I have an RH club, and I have like a, or I want to form a club. What are the requirements? Is it, do I need to have so many members before I make my club official?
Yeah, so we're building up ARSA. We have different clubs throughout the U.S. We have a lot of support for new clubs. Support new clubs by it's the club's choice, either paying for a workshop or a setup for a mock trial. You know, pay for someone to come to your area and do some coaching, or financially supplement your first trial. And then we have a lot of like educational resources to get folks started. So you would just need four national ARSA paying members.
Okay.
And then if you all have club dues on your own, then that's just on you. But yeah, so four ARSA paying members, and then we're going to support the creation of a new club. The rule book, like to build the ladder, you know, it's in metric, you know, so, so that's like one of the things we can help with, because like Home Depot and Lowe's doesn't really sell in the, to be cost efficient, the proper sizes for the rungs and whatnot. So we've made many a ladders, and so we can talk clubs through of how to build this equipment in the US and it still be under spec. So things like that, or all training challenges, like the thing I mentioned about like a laying down person.
Mm-hmm.
And actually right now we have, we just started a few weeks ago, some quarterly challenges. So it's open to anyone. You don't need to be in the US. You don't need to be an ARSA member. Everyone is welcome. And we'll have like announce these quarterly. And there'll be a small prize, but honestly, the big reason to participate is you're going to get feedback from an apprentice judge. So our first quarterly challenge is for tracking area search or man trailing a victim seated in an open area. And so you'll submit a video showing the last 30 seconds, 60 seconds, you know, whatever, enough to show
sure
the dog coming in and performing the alert correctly.
Okay.
And then I said you'll get feedback from an apprentice judge, and we'll have a winner. And also, we hope to share these videos too to help new people starting. Like, oh, the dog here, it would have been a few points off. You know, the handler could have done something different to help folks in their training.
Sure. Let's say, you know, I have my club and I have my four members. And I'm ready to, you know, we do some training. And then after about a year, maybe even after a few months, we decide, hey, I think we can have a trial. And I know in the other sports, you know, in the sport that I do PSA, I would arrange with the organization. And then I would pay for the judge to, you know, to come to our area. I also have to pay like, you know, four helpers, decoys, to come over to the area. Right, because they have to be certified decoys. So what is the requirement if I wanted to host an ARSA trial, other than the judge, what other personnel would be there that would be official, that would make the trial official?
Yeah, so just be the judge. So we are a member of the AWDF, the American Working Dog Federation. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how much you know of the international dog politics, and it's weird being an American and trying to coordinate, you know, mm-hmm. international dog sports. But so the AWDF would invite an FCI judge on your club's behalf. So similar to hiring another judge.
Okay.
But the requirements for it, you know, if you're a new club and it's going to be mostly your members, pretty much everyone's going to be at the beginner level.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need, you know, any suitable flattish field to do the healing and, you know, whatnot. So there is, like I said, the rubble pile that's, you know, maybe a chain link fence on the ground, a shipping pallet, a tire, a tarp, you know, some kind of junk that the dog has to heal over.
Sure.
There's a plank that's basically, like I said, a piece of wood on cinder blocks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tunnel with a chute. So it could mm-hmm. be like an AKC style agility tunnel, like the nice yeah. that collapse, or it could mm-hmm. just be, you know, the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the plastic pipe that's smooth on the yeah. inside, and you don't even need a real chute. You could just have a tarp that's okay. kind of tied at the end. Mm-hmm. You do need one table. So it's a meter high, and the top of it is a meter square.
Okay.
Those would be the only requirements for the field. Well, you would need a gun with, you know, 22 blanks.
Okay.
Because we do gunfire during the healing and the downstay.
Okay.
You need some helpers, but they could all come from your club.
Okay.
All the hiders and like the carry person, those can all be from your club. The person to shoot the gun.
Sure.
You will need to find in your area a neutral / friendly dog and bitch. It can be any breed, any size, to do the healing around these other two dogs. Obviously, you want kind of a laid back dog that's not gonna give dirty eyeballs yeah. to the competing dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's it for the beginner level obedience. The intermediate has a couple more things, but nothing crazy. And the advanced has that swing. And then, you know, so folks that are going to enter tracking, you would just need the space for tracking. Man trailing, you don't need anything. Like I said, we would start at some sort of busy intersection and just urban or suburban, whatever your area is, and the person would walk and make a couple turns and then stop. The area search is also, you don't really need anything special. Like when I was training out in California, all they had was a vineyard. So it was at a winery, and you know, not really good hiding trees.
Right.
And I think some of the trials that are in your area, you know, I think people are hiding behind tumbleweeds. But I say area wilderness, it doesn't have to be, you know, like an oak tree. It can be what is in your area,
whatever you have. Yeah,
you know, because all the sport requirements really. Mm-hmm. They are the exact same training requirements as actual SAR teams. And we have had folks that do this as a sport. Mm-hmm. They'll invite their local sheriff department or whatever is the situation in their area to come mm-hmm. over, watch them train, see the dogs, see the capabilities. And their dogs have been called to help with actual searches. You know, so when we're joking about tumbleweeds and vineyards, it's because you would potentially be looking for people in your actual lost community. So it's what you have.
Yeah.
So there's not really much requirements as far as that.
I really like it as I'm visualizing everything you're saying. It sounds really, really interesting. I really like it. Now, let's say, you know, I'm one of those ultra competitive people, right? And I'm the type that will go, yes, I'm going to host a trial here, but I also want to go to other trials so that I can keep competing or advance. And now let's say I want to go to nationals. You guys do nationals once a year, I would imagine.
Yep. Yep.
Once a year, right? So in that instance, then, let's say, you know, let's say I've done maybe a couple of trials in my area and I've done tracking. So if I sign up for the nationals trial, I have the choice to say I want to do tracking, right? It's not like it's whatever is at the trial.
No, yeah. So your dog would be qualified for the level 3 tracking, for instance.
Tracking, okay.
Yep. Then the next weekend you wanted to start with beginner area search, that's totally fine too. But you couldn't just jump to then the advanced area search, instance.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
As far as the international championships, mm-hmm. there's a few options. So I mentioned one, ARSA has the ability to send an American team for the FCI RH competition. And so mm-hmm. it's traditionally always been held in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
For those with pedigreed Malinois, the FMBB sometimes includes RH. And 1 year, 5 years ago, I think the Dutch Shepherd, the equivalent to the FMBB, the Dutch Shepherd International Championship offered RH. And then I'm less familiar with the SV, but they also have a championship for RH. Mm-hmm. DVG has an RH championship. And then the International Rescue Dog Organization also has an international RH championship. And so your eligibility, of course, you know, your points and whatnot. But beyond that, the eligibility would be your breed.
Okay. Okay. And so what are some resources that people listening that, you know, found this very, very interesting, just like I did. You know, I went from, oh yeah, I looked at the website, to now I'm really fascinated by everything you've told me. So let's say some of the listeners were equally intrigued by this interview. What would be their step? What are some places that they can find information? How could they kind of get the ball rolling?
Yeah, so we have some different resources on our website. We're building them up as time allows. You know, we're 100% volunteer organization. No one takes money for anything. We have some books. We can offer a lot of support. We have on Facebook, and it's duplicated on our website. We have tips for every single obedience exercise and a lot of training challenges. So we take these questions from our own training experience. For instance, in a wilderness search, some dogs are a little bit hesitant to get to range too far away from their handler. Right. So we talk about this as is a common training issue, and we give a bunch of tips and training exercises to help the dog overcome that. We also have, you know, you can have the opposite problem, that the dog just doesn't start searching until they've run full out for like 5 minutes. And I will give you and all the listeners a tip on the intermediate level. It's not in the rules, but by tradition, one of your two victims will be at the threshold at the far left or the far right. So if you have a dog that just, you say, go find them, and they just blast through, and then about 5 minutes later, then they're like, oh, I should start searching. They're going to miss the threshold person. So we have a bunch of helpful information on our website, because, you know, we're all training. You know, we've all trained the tracking, the area search, the rubble, and the man trailing. And so we know what issues the dogs have. And we give handling tips for, you know, when you're actually on deck, how to, you know, make sure you're using the wind properly, make sure you're using the most of your time. So we have tons of info there. We haven't done one too recently, but we also are set up to do either by Zoom or Facebook Live, folks that, you know, come and say, oh, I have this training challenge, you know, can you help me? And we have a lot of folks in ARSA that have competed internationally, many who also are actual SAR handlers. I would encourage folks to consider our quarterly training challenges. So I mentioned my Dutch Shepherd had done bite work, so he was very familiar with a bark and hold. So we don't use that phrase when we're doing the search and rescue, but, you know, it's a similar exercise, although we don't want any touching. So like for Mondio, he did the, and French Ring, he did the hold between the legs. You know, so we had to retrain it so he's not touching the person. But, you know, that's a pretty common skill set. So, you know, anyone can come and take our quarterly, this quarter's training challenge, just a person seated in an open area. You say, go find. Can your dog do that nice bark, 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 you know, rhythmic, you know, because they're potentially calling you from some distance away. And can they maintain the barking and the focus on the pretend hidden person? Until you come up and heal them off. And in future quarters, we'll have some obedience challenges, but we'll mix them up between the scent work and the obedience. But there's not a lot of skills that are super unique.
Okay.
You know, the one that is different is a carry. And I know maybe some of your listeners might be worried about the carry, but I have personally helped many dogs that, you know, are a little nervous.
Right.
And there's very easy, systematic ways to make the dog feel comfortable and everybody's safe and the dog is comfortable and there's no issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you mentioned the website. Could you tell us the website? I'm going to put it on the description as well.
It's searchandrescuesport.org.
Searchandrescuesport.org. And is there a Facebook group?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you could type in ARSA, or it's also linked off the website.
And, okay, perfect.
We're not too active on Instagram just yet, but we also have an Instagram account.
We would love to hear from folks
that have questions, either how to get started questions, you started, you know, with a club, or training questions. We're always very happy to help and get more folks interested in the sport.
Okay. So what I like about Facebook groups is it's interactive. You know, like I could post a question or I could look at the posts that maybe previous people have asked. And I could go on there. So the Facebook group, is at least for me, will probably be a good place to kind of get a little bit of
information. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm kind of old school. That we definitely would respond to all Facebook posts and be interested in having a dialogue. The nice thing about the website is everything is all there. You don't have to scroll through.
That's true.
Like on the website, we have about a year and a half of the tips from Facebook copied over. So you can just read like, oh, I'm having trouble with the ladder. And then you can read the Facebook post from 9 months ago about the ladder.
Okay.
So it's maybe a little easier to find information, but we're definitely open to communication through our Facebook site for sure.
Okay. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for your time. This is a really interesting interview, and I'm leaving the interview with so much more information and so much more imagery now that you told me about this. And it just seems like such a great alternative to some of the other sports that I find very interesting. I find it very fascinating. That this is something that people can do other than just, you know, protection or, you know, some of the other sports. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was great talking.
Likewise. All right. Well, thank you very much. And you have a good day. And just so the listeners, make sure you look up at the website. I'm going to put it on the link and check out the Facebook group. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.